Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, here's a marriage for you, Bill and Hillary Clinton. We've only been watching them, and I mean really watching them, for 20 years now. But do we really understand them? Our guest today is a prominent historian with a new book out on the ultimate power couple. That book, Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal. William Chafe says that no two personalities in recent history speak more compellingly to the importance of understanding that the personal and the political are inseparable. Their marriage is exceedingly complicated, often bitterly quarrelsome, and comprised of two superachievers from dysfunctional families. And get this, Bill Chafe expects Hillary to run for president 4 years from now. Bill Chafe just officially retired after 40 years of teaching at Duke, and he speaks tonight at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Bill, welcome. Welcome
Thank
to Kansas City.
Thank you so
City.
Much. Great to be here.
Well, this is one complicated couple. To what extent do you finally understand them now after spending so much time on the book?
I think that one never understands the complete complexity of a couple like Bill and Hillary. But I think that you can get a very clear sense of the way in which they function as a team. Sometimes with great success, sometimes with great failure. And it's really when the balance gets out of kilter that things go bad. But ordinarily, that it's a roller coaster. Their entire lives are a roller coaster. And the one thing you can be sure of is that when you reach the peak of the height, you're about to plummet. And there's going to be something else going on.
And you say it's important to understand them together and how they work. Why, Bill?
Because they do not function as isolated individuals. He is someone who is very, very people-oriented. He loves to make contact, make new friends. He's very emotional. He's someone who actually has very little self-discipline in terms of how he spends his time.
Yeah.
She is completely structured, focused, on target. And so in some respects, if you go back to when they first meet at Yale Law School, he is all over the place. He never goes to class. and he is very much interested in winning the largest number of people to his side as he can. And she just always says, get to the point, Bill, get to the point. So when they appear in moot court together – before a Yale law professor, she's the one who is real focused, and he's very emotional. So, ironically, in a classic sense, he's the feminine, she's the masculine.
Ah, that's interesting. Well, given all that, I mean, does it make sense to you that Hillary would stand by him through all of his affairs and even the tumult of the White House years?
It does. Because I think that it's a commitment that she made. She knew she was making a gamble.
Say she went into this marriage with her eyes wide open.
She knew that Bill was a philanderer. She had experienced that firsthand when she was working with him on his congressional campaign. And yet she's had the sense that their future together was going to be stronger than their futures one alone by themselves.
Yeah.
It actually goes back to some of the lessons they both take from their childhoods. Bill, as you say, comes from a dramatically dysfunctional family. His mother spent 90 minutes each morning putting makeup on, and she says in her autobiography, that's basically to hide who the real me is. The first marriage she has to Bill Blythe, she is totally unaware of the fact that he's been married three times before and, in fact, is still married when he marries her. She thinks he's a salesman. He's in the Army. And, of course, he dies 3 months after he comes back from fighting the European War. But it's a dysfunctional kind of situation. She doesn't find out about these things about Bill Blythe until 40 years later.
How does that affect Bill Clinton growing up?
Well, what happens next is even more important. Because she, her second marriage is to Roger Clinton. Roger Clinton is a partygoer like she is. He's flirtatious like she is. He drinks a lot like she does. What she did not fully realize, she didn't know about Roger either. He'd been married four times and had been accused of spousal abuse in one of the divorces. What I think she did not know was how bad he was. He was an alcoholic. And he was abusive. And one of the things that Bill did on a number of occasions was to rescue his mother when his father my stepfather was beating her up and warning him never to do that again. Well, one of the things you learn by looking at the literature on children of alcoholics and abusive parents is that, especially if you're someone like Bill, who's the by far the older child, he's his stepbrother or half-brother, rather, Roger, is born quite a bit later. Bill feels a responsibility to make things right, to heal things, to redeem the family, to bring honor to what is dishonorable.
And it sends him on his trajectory.
He sends him on his trajectory from the get-go. He is going to be number one. So he's number one in school. He makes the most friends. He gets elected to the American Legion's Boys Nation and becomes their candidate for U.S. Senate when they send a delegation to Washington. He's the Arkansas candidate for U.S. Senate. He basically does nothing but distinguish himself as a means of trying to make things okay. And from the time he's 16 to 17 years old onward, he has a trajectory. He's going to run for attorney general. He tells people this. Attorney general in Arkansas, then governor in Arkansas, and then president of the United States. That mindset is there from the get-go.
Single-minded focus.
Single-minded focus.
Well, and Hillary, you write, had her own struggles in her home with her father. What happened there?
Well, I think that Hillary is generally seen as coming from a much more normal family, but it wasn't normal at all. And if you look at the story of her mother, who's really a terribly important figure.
Probably the person she's closest to in her life next to her husband.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Hillary's mother, Dorothy, first of all, she's born to a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old. When she's born, her parents are 15 years old and 17 years old.
Wow.
When she's 8 years old, they send Dorothy and her younger brother, 3-year-old brother, on a cross-country train trip from Los Angeles back to Chicago to live with their parents, with her grandparents. Her grandparents are not any more kind to her than her parents have been. She goes to work for a lace and curtain factory owner. That's Hugh Rodham. Hugh Rodham marries her. But she's very different than he is. He is gruff, hard-nosed, in many ways psychologically abusive, not physically abusive, but he makes fun of his wife all the time. They argue constantly. Just to give you one classic example, if a child leaves the top off the toothpaste in the bathroom, he throws it out the window into the snow and makes them go get it.
That's a breathtaking story.
It's an incredible story.
I'm just stunned by that.
It's unbelievable. And he turns the heat off at 9 o'clock every night, no matter how cold it is in the house.
Mm.
Okay? So this is someone who is not easy to live with. And yet the basic lesson that Dorothy teaches Hillary many lessons. She's very, very religious, very involved in the social gospel.
Dorothy is
very involved in the social gospel. Gets Hillary very involved in the Methodist Youth Fellowship, which is very critical to her life. But the basic thing that Dorothy teaches Hillary is, no matter what, you never leave your family. You don't let your family dissolve. You need to protect your children. You need to stay together. Never consider divorce. Well, that's a pretty basic lesson. And it sure does play out many, many times.
Because on so many levels, it is astonishing that Bill and Hillary have survived this roller coaster.
Yes.
And still seemingly intact. How intact they are, who knows.
Right.
But it's amazing to me they're still together. And to so many other folks, too.
It is. And it's largely a function of the degree to which Hillary very early on, as part of the gamble she's taken to marry Bill, thinking that, in effect, together they can accomplish more than they can individually. One of the things that she does from the very beginning is that she rescues him constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever she rescues him, she gets more leverage, more power, more ability to change things.
And that's a theme that runs throughout this book.
Absolutely.
Because there are so many rescues over the years. And so there's something in it for her, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the functional reality is that whenever she helps him, she gains. And she helps him most, of course, when he messes up sexually and has all these affairs.
Mm-hmm.
But when she rescues him, then she has a call on her own ability to make things happen on her own. And he cannot challenge her because he is now so much in debt to her that she's in control.
Hmm. William Chafe is our guest. He's the author of a new book, Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal. Fascinating look at one of the most fascinating couples in American history. If you want to join our conversation, as always, you can do it 816-235-2888. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Bill Chafe speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. You can RSVP for that event at kclibrary.org, or just show up. Again, that's tonight at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. What's interesting to me, Bill, you just said it a couple minutes ago, from a very early point in their relationship, Hillary understands there's incredible potential here, not only with her husband, but with them together. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Hillary is a star all the way through her years in college at Wellesley and then at Yale Law School. She's a star because she has the same kind of drive to be a transformative figure that he does.
But she does it sort of the old-fashioned way.
She does.
Studious, plays by the rules.
Absolutely.
Always goes to class, just the polar opposite of her husband.
Yes. And yeah. and one of the things that she does is to be incredibly effective at working with people. She builds consensus. She's very involved in, for example, after Dr. King's assassination at Wellesley, in helping to get Wellesley to be more sensitive to issues of race, recruit more black faculty, recruit more black students. But she never, ever alienates the president of Wellesley or the people who are powerful colleagues of hers on the campus. She does the same thing at Yale. So she's a consensus builder, someone who works within the system. Now, both she and Bill, after they meet at Yale, we'll talk more about the meeting later on perhaps, but
yeah,
they go and work for McGovern, George McGovern, in 1972, and they work in Texas. Hillary is working in San Antonio, and she's working with a woman named Betsy Wright. Betsy Wright is becomes one of her best friends.
And becomes Bill's chief of staff.
And becomes Bill's chief of staff.
As governor.
At the University of when he's governor of Arkansas, correct. Now, Betsy Wright is convinced that Hillary will be the first woman president, that she has all of the capacity to rise to the top on her own, and she should not allow herself to be distracted by any kind of relationship with someone like Bill, who she knows from the get-go also is not to be trusted.
He's going
to
be trouble.
His personal habits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Hillary really has to make a decision. Now, we need to recall the fact that this is the early 1970s. Women are still not in a position to really be able to function in a competitive fashion with men in the world of politics.
Right.
Although Hillary has done better than almost anybody else of her generation, she's one of 20% of the Yale Law School class entering who are women, while every other law school is 5%. She is incredibly bright and very talented. But she has to basically make a decision. Am I going to try to do this on my own? Or am I going to try to do this with the person I've fallen in love with, who has his own incredible talent? Now, she recognizes the degree to which they are complementary,
mm-hmm.
the way in which they provide each other support that neither of them has by himself or herself. So basically, when she decides to go to Arkansas, she's really doing so thinking about whether this gamble is worth making. He's proposed to her. She said, I'm not sure I'm ready for this yet. She's aware of his womanizing when she goes to work on the 74 congressional campaign.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she sends her father and brother there to kind of monitor Bill. Mm-hmm. And the campaign staff sneaks out Bill's girlfriends whenever they come, et cetera. So she's not at all unaware of what's going on here. But she finally comes to the decision or the conclusion that it really is worth the gamble. They're great together. They love each other. They care a lot for each other. Mm. And they have this unbelievable talent together that neither of them would be able to carry forward individually to achieve their goals. But if you just think about the circumstances of their wedding, she buys her wedding gown the night before she's married.
Meaning?
Well, it doesn't sound like it's a long-standing plan.
Sort of, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it sounds like there's some doubts all the way up to the very end.
Hey, how did they meet to begin with at Yale Law School, Bill?
Well, there are many stories. The one which is most widely repeated is that they've been looking at each other over a period of weeks as Bill joins. She's ahead of him in law school. He's coming a year after she's been a student there. And they're looking at each other all the time. And she supposedly comes up to him in the library one day and says, look, if we're going to stare at each other this way, let's at least know who each other is. And they start talking to each other, and they become a couple very quickly.
Is that the story you buy the most?
I actually buy the other story. I like the format of that story.
I do too. It fits.
It fits. But yeah. I think the other story is that he basically wants to meet her and joins her in the registration line. He's already registered, but she doesn't know that. They manage to get admitted to the Yale Art Museum to see a Rothko exhibit. They become very close to each other. And the next day, he calls her up, and she's sick, and he brings her chicken soup.
Mm-hmm.
I like that story.
And from the get-go, these two are close. I mean, this thing
yes.
clicks pretty quickly.
It clicks pretty quickly, except that she is so different from all the women that his mother has raised him to prize and to cultivate and to pursue.
Good, because Bill sort of sees women in two camps.
Two camps.
The camps are?
The two camps are the beauty queen, the buxom blonde,
yeah.
The person who you are immediately attracted to physically.
And that's not Hillary.
That's not Hillary. And Hillary is the no makeup, no fancy dress, T-shirts and sweatshirts and Coca-Cola-sized
yes.
Glasses. And yet this is someone who he thinks he wants to grow old with. So how do you explain this guy who essentially has literally two libidos?
Well, and it's so exactly right. And it's so interesting that as you describe the two of them, you would think that Hillary, based on what you're saying, is destined to go to the White House first, not Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, people who knew them then, I'm guessing, not only Betsy Wright, were saying, mm-hmm. hey, it's not going to be Bill in the White House first. It'll be maybe Hillary.
Except that Bill has this charisma. He has this charm.
Unbelievable
he has,
charisma.
He has this capacity to win over someone. Unlike a lot of politicians, he will look you straight in the eye and he will engage you and he will mm-hmm. win you as his friend. He always is out reaching out to people. Hillary's not that good on that one-to-one kind of basis.
Yeah.
Hillary cannot sweep an audience off its feet the way Bill can. So in many ways, he has qualities that she can provide some spine for and some steel for. But he's much more effective at working with people in the political arena. So, at one point, she is considering very actively running for governor of Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
and she just doesn't have the ability to reach out to people and win people's support.
Hmm.
And so she continues to be the first lady.
Bill Chafe is our guest again. His new book, Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal. You can see and hear him tonight, 6:30, the Plaza Branch at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Adam from Lawrence. Adam, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
How are you doing?
Well, thanks, Adam.
Well, you just kind of touched on it about how Bill's charisma and everything has always been one of his strong points. And I think this election cycle, it seems like his campaigning for Barack has been much more powerful than when he was campaigning for Hillary, and I was wondering why you think that is true.
I think that's an extraordinarily important question. My sense is that Bill didn't really know how to fit into that campaign in 2008.
Difficult position to be in, for sure.
Difficult position to be in. I think that he was aware of the degree to which many people had a resistance to the idea of these two people being back in the White House together,
mm-hmm.
With all the things that went on during that 8 years in the White House. I would say two things. I would say, first of all, Hillary was an extraordinarily successful senator from New York. I argue in the book that she went back to the person she was before she met him. Mm-hmm. She stopped demonizing people. She went back to consensus, to listening to people, to reaching across the aisle, et cetera.
She grew up, learned, grew a little bit in the White House years.
She did, but I think that especially the Lewinsky affair ultimately liberated her to become who she had been before and to go off on her own. It was her turn now. But I think the second thing is that, her campaign was really run by Bill's people. Mark Penn was her campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Penn was the right-hand person of Dick Morris, mm-hmm. who was the political person most important in the White House years, especially after the massive defeats of 1994. It was not a well-run campaign because they were trying to control Hillary too much, trying to keep her under wraps, trying to keep her from saying too many things. And then I think that not only was the campaign, I think, not well run or organized, but when Bill gets involved, he kind of loses control. He gets out of control, mm-hmm. as, of course, he frequently got out of control. But when Bill starts sounding off on his own, as he does in South Carolina, when he makes the allegation or makes the statement that in many ways Obama is like Jesse Jackson, implicitly suggesting that he's a race candidate, not mm-hmm. someone who is really a serious candidate for the presidency, it injects a level of skepticism and concern in the campaign, which is very devastating, I think, to the overall morale of the campaign. And I think that in the long run, Bill feels some responsibility for the degree to which that campaign failed. So going back to the person's question, I do think that they learned a lot from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, Bill Clinton has the capacity to rise to occasions in a manner that almost no one else can. He did it after Oklahoma City and the terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
He really did it whenever he went and spoke to a black audience when he was president. He did it really with some of his with his healthcare speech mm-hmm. in September of '93. But he's never done it better than he did at the Democratic Convention.
Yeah.
And he kind of reached a whole new height there. And what was he doing? Well, I think he was doing three things. He was solidifying his role as being a very significant president of the 20th century who basically did a better job than many people had done. Secondly, I think what he did was to basically repay his error of the 2008 campaign. He paved the way for Hillary to run in 2016 with a very different kind of background and backdrop than it happened in 2008. And the third thing he did, which is ultimately at the time the most important, was he made a case for Obama that Obama could not make for himself.
Yeah.
And he did so with the arithmetic. And mm-hmm. the arithmetic was overwhelming. There really are very, very few people in our national history who have the capacity to make very complicated questions as simple and crystal clear as Bill Clinton did that night.
You think Hillary's going to run for president on her own in 2016?
I do.
Because?
Because I think that's part of her life aspiration. And I think that she now is – I think she's functioning now with a level of self-confidence and transparency. I saw the speech she gave at the Clinton Global Initiative the other day. I've never seen her speak better. She was so self-confident, so in charge, so in control. It was a different kind of I thought it was just a powerful, powerful speech. And I think that she can do that and will do that.
She said she won't do it. I mean, they all say that, right?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I think you do not make the speech that she made the other day unless you are very much thinking about 4 years from now.
That's interesting. Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, you're on Up to Date with Bill Chafe. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, it's interesting. It always boils down to people, the whole positioning in politics and in life in general. But anyway, not to be on my own soapbox. I'm very interested. Do you have any kind of insights into Hillary's evolution from a very strong Republican foundation to her Democratic Party affiliation? And how she evolved in that way? Was it because of Bill? Was it because of a social awakening? What exactly could you give us a little insight on that?
Very good question.
First
of all, her dad was the Goldwater Republican. Her mom was a liberal. Her mom always encouraged her to go in a liberal direction. Her mom, as I say, I could not overemphasize the importance of the Methodist Youth Fellowship. She believed in the social gospel. She had a youth minister at her church who was incredibly important in her life, who took her and the rest of the youth group in to hear Dr. King preach in Chicago, who basically took his youth group into the slums and had them engage with people who came from very different backgrounds. There were no blacks. There were no poor people in Park Ridge. And so basically I think that the a most important ingredient here is her religious conscience. The second thing that's going on is that although she is elected the president of the Wellesley Republican Club during her freshman year, she's already working with black kids in Roxbury, and she's has a boyfriend at Harvard who has a black roommate, and they talk about civil rights all the time. And she becomes more and more involved in liberal causes so that she campaigns for Jean McCarthy in the New Hampshire primary in 68, even though she goes to the Republican convention in 68 as part of the Republican team.
This
is basically someone who is on a steady path away from being a Goldwater Republican all during her youth group years and her years at Wellesley.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break.
Great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here about America's ultimate power couple, Bill and Hillary Clinton. We'll take your phone calls at 816-235-2888. We'll talk a little more about Hillary Clinton as First Lady and how she sort of messed up Bill Clinton's first term as president. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's advice on helping your grass recover after this summer's hot weather and our talk about the digital sandbox, you'll find them in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow, some films to make you think. Our indie foreign and documentary film critics return to share reviews of the latest films showing on area screens. This hour, we're visiting with Bill Chafe. He is the author of a new book, Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal. Again, he speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch on the Country Club Plaza. Again, 6:30. You can RSVP at kclibrary.org. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address is uptodate@kcur.org. You know, before we go into the White House years, Bill, I wanted to ask you about a scene in this book that I guess rang a bell, but it had been a while. Just an absolutely startling story about Bill Clinton. It involves Betsy Wright, who was Bill's chief of staff. We talked about her in our first half, and she was one of Hillary's closest supporters. She kept a list of all the people that she knew that Bill had slept with when he was governor, and then she was stunned when she confronted Bill with this, and he actually added to that list a whole lot of names. What do you make of that? It's stunning.
It is stunning. It's stunning, and it suggests the degree to which we're talking about something which is almost pathological.
Yeah.
This is an addiction.
Yeah.
Where there are two parallel lives.
Is that the conclusion? It was an addiction?
Clinton himself talks about the fact that we all have addictions. For some of us, it's sex. Others, it's alcohol.
Yeah.
It's clearly sex in his case, and he can't control it. But on the other hand, he is unwilling to, I think, really confront it and own up to it. That's another whole story. We should talk about that toward the end. One of the things I think which is most important here is that whenever Bill gets into deep trouble, Hillary is there to basically bring him back and rescue him.
Mm-hmm.
Much of this involves issues of sex and his womanizing, but it doesn't all involve that. I mean, when he's elected governor of Arkansas, you know, 1978, the youngest governor ever elected in the United States of America.
Wow! Wow!
He's brilliant, but he's chaotic. The office is a mess. There's no focus. There's no clear agenda. The staff is divided between Bill's people and Hillary's people. They fight all the time. He has the misfortune of advocating making over the roads of Arkansas, but to pay for it, he puts in a tax which essentially taxes cars by their weight. By their weight, which means the people who are the poorest have the biggest, oldest cars are paying the most. And it really backfires, and he finds himself suddenly very, very unpopular after having been elected by over 57% of the vote. And so he finds himself being defeated in 1980, and he is so depressed. He's so disconsolate, doesn't know what to do. goes around asking everybody, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? Hillary basically comes in and takes charge. She brings in Dick Morris, the political guru from New York, who was such a critically important figure in Bill Clinton's entire career. Mm. She organizes a reelection campaign. She streamlines everything. She puts it all together. She makes his reelection happen. And what happens in return for that? He recognizes how much she's done, and she becomes the most important person in his second administration. He asks her to take on the responsibility of heading the task force on education in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Education is the biggest problem in Arkansas, 49th in the union in terms of per capita expenditure. Yeah. She does a masterful job. He says, I want someone in charge of this who's closer to me than anyone else. She goes around the state. She holds hearings. This becomes the model for what happens 10 years
With health care reform.
With health care reform.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You see, she has basically rescued him and put it all back together again. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing.
Well, let's fast forward 10 years because you do conclude that it was Hillary's missteps, Bill, that went such a long way toward messing up the first years, the early years of her husband's administration. First, it was her refusal to release records of her legal work on the Whitewater Project. Then it was her political missteps on the universal health care plan. How much damage did she do?
Well, I think we have to go back to how it happened. There were three primary areas of rescue in this career. One is in 1980. One is in 1991, 92. And the third is Monica Lewinsky.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hillary was always aware of the number of women who might claim to have had affairs with Bill. And her response to this was basically not to get angry at Bill as much as to investigate all the negatives about those women and keep them from speaking out. But they knew this was going to be an issue. So when he decides to run for president, they together decide they need to basically act preemptively on this issue. So in the summer of 1991, together they go to a breakfast given by conducted on a monthly basis by Godfrey Sperling, the Washington correspondent of the Christian Science Monitor, and talk to the reporters there. And they raise the issue of womanizing. And she says, I just want to tell you that I love this person. We have had problems in our marriage, but we are a solid couple and we are devoted to each other and we're going to be together for the rest of our lives. Okay. She blows them away. That speech is really a rehearsal because 9 months later.
All sounds familiar, doesn't it?
9 months later, Jennifer Flowers says in all these tabloids that she's had a 12-year affair with Bill Clinton. And Hillary is right there. We need to be preemptive. Bill is plummeting in the polls because of this revelation. He was very close to Tsongas in the New Hampshire primary. Now he goes down under 20%. And they say we've got to do something about this. So they arranged to go on 60 Minutes, the night of the Super Bowl, the largest viewing audience that can imagine. And she basically gives the same speech she gave to Godfrey Sperling. She talks about how much she loves her husband, how devoted they are to each other, the fact that, yes, they've had problems like all married couples have problems, but we have gotten the better of those, and we believe in each other. It's extraordinary. She saves the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back in New Hampshire to finish a few points behind Tsongas, but he's gone, very, very done an incredible job. And then I think what happens is that he owes her.
Yeah.
And that's when he starts talking about the co-presidency. That's when they talk about being partners. We're getting a two for the price of one. And she takes advantage of the fact that he is ceding this position to her. And plays an instrumental role in all the decisions that are made after the election.
But it doesn't work in the White House very well. At least it didn't work early on.
No, it didn't work early on.
Because?
Among other things, she is pivotal in deciding not to have a strong chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a strong chief of staff is the most important thing, like Jim Baker for Ronald Reagan, like Sherman Adams for Dwight Eisenhower. You need to have a strong person to make the calls. But if the strong chief of staff making the calls and she can't become the chief of staff, then that means that's going to undermine her power. So she argues against that, and they go with Mac McClarty, a childhood friend of Bill Clinton's. There's chaos in the White House. She argues and succeeds in getting for an office next to Al Gore's and Bill Clinton's in the West Wing of the White House, not the traditional place for the First Lady to be. But then it goes on from there. She insists on being in charge of health care, very much like the Education Task Force.
She won't compromise. She's very
transient
on that.
At any point, she could have had a bill covering 95% of the American people, working with people like John Chafee from Rhode Island, a Republican in the Senate, and others, other Republicans. She wants the entire thing. She refuses to have welfare reform go first. But she does other things, too. And these are things that are in some ways inexplicable. She's the one who decides that the White House press corps will be barred from going into the White House to visit the press secretary's office in the White House.
Wow.
This is something the White House press corps has done for decades.
You're just asking for trouble.
You're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
She's the one who fires the White House travel staff. The travel staff does all these things for the reporters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cannot afford to alienate them. And yet she already is in a position of feeling as though, and so is Bill, the Washington press corps, the Washington establishment is really hostile to them. They are these people from way out of town.
Yeah.
They're bubbas.
Yeah.
And so this develops this kind of almost us against them mentality. And that ultimately comes to the most critical moment of the entire administration in some respects is when she decides that she will not release the Whitewater Papers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the story is worth telling a little bit because David Gergen is brought onto the White House staff, a nationally known commentator, U.S. News and World Report,
yeah,
et cetera. And he's brought on and he's worked for three other presidents. He's brought on to kind of make peace with the Washington establishment. And he negotiates this deal with the Washington Post, where the Washington Post editorial board says, if you give us the Whitewater Papers from Rose Law Firm about the scandal in Arkansas and about all of the things with that, the McDougal family, et cetera, if you do that and we find nothing wrong there, we will be the first ones to defend you and make sure that the record is clear. Bill Clinton says, I think that's a good idea. Everybody political on the political staff of the White House says that's a great
idea.
Let's
do it. And she says
– we will
no
not
way.
Do it.
Yeah.
I will. Those are my papers. And as soon as she says no and rejects out of hand the idea of this kind of deal, the Washington Post, the New York Times unleash a full-scale investigation. There's more press coverage of Whitewater in the next 6 months, three times as much press coverage of Whitewater as of the healthcare initiative. Basically, the next month, the demand for a special prosecutor gets so intense that Bill Clinton has to give in. So that decision not to release the papers leads immediately to the independent prosecutor. That becomes Ken Starr. Ken Starr becomes the person out to basically get her first, but he can't do that, so he goes after Bill. That leads directly to Monica Lewinsky. Phew. That leads directly to impeachment. None of that would have happened if those papers had been released.
Oh, man. And so that leads to the Republican Revolution of 1994,
yes,
and we all know about that. We just have a couple minutes left, Bill. How did the two of them weather Monica Lewinsky? How did all that happen? Because, again, it just takes your breath away that they got through that.
Well, first of all, at the beginning, Bill is so indecisive. He thinks he may have to resign.
He's lost.
And if you recall his appearance on the Jim Larris show the day after the scandal breaks,
he uses the verb ineffectually.
He says there is no sexual relationship.
The verb tense stood out like a sore thumb.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he actually has asked Dick Barnes to conduct a poll as to whether he can survive if he's been unfaithful. It's Hillary who puts the steel in his spine, because she's the one who the next day goes on the Matt Lauer Today show and says, this is all a vast right-wing conspiracy. That basically puts Bill in the position of having to go into total denial, which he does, and he buys time for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very important 6 months, because during that period of time, the American people make peace with the idea that this might have happened.
Yeah.
And they ultimately survive because Hillary believes him initially that he did not have a relationship. And then when she finds out that he did have the relationship, she makes the final decision that rescuing and saving him is not only important for the country and for her and for their marriage, it's also important for her and her future political career.
And it frees her up, as you said, to run for the New York Senate seat in 2000 then.
Yep.
Yeah. And their relationship today is like what, Bill? How would you describe it now?
Well, I don't know, because it's a very hard. I mean, they're only with each other two or three days a month, because if her travels, they live in different places, et cetera. But I think they talk all the time. And I did hear a story the other day from an audience I was speaking to about a woman who was walking taking a hike on a path in Westchester County, New York. And she came across Bill and Hillary Clinton hiking together, holding hands.
Really? It's a nice way to end things.
Yes.
And so your sense is they've made some sort of peace.
I think they made some sort of peace. I think that he now is fully ready to acknowledge that she's in control and she's independent, and he will do what he can to help her. I think that she runs in 2016. I think she will be elected. And I think that if that happens, I would not be surprised if he only spent part of his time living at the White House and the rest of his time doing the Clinton Global Initiative and living in New York.
That's Bill Chafe. Again, he speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. You can RSVP at kclibrary.org or just show up. Again, Bill Chafe's new book, Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal. Sure enjoyed having you, Bill.
Thank you. Great to be here,
Thanks so much
Steve.
For coming in.
Thank you.